Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kuncha Bihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Giridhara Dari Jaya Giridhara Dari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Giridhara Dari Jaya Giridhara Dari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Bana Chahari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hare
Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta, Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Ashata Deshatarine. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Garadara, Shiva Sadi, Gauravata Vinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Thank you for allowing me to serve the Srimad Bhagavatam today. I pray that I can say something a little bit useful for you today. Today we are doing a new chapter, third canto, the status quo, new chapter, chapter 3, which is the Lord's pastimes out of Vrindavan, and we'll be doing text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Tato Jayam Udirayat.
Tato Jayam Udirayat.
Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Bhagavati Uttama Shloke.
Bhagavati Rama Shloke.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki.
Uddhava Vacha.
I hope this is the right melody. Tatasa agatya puram swapitrosh.
Tatasa agatya puram swapitrosh.
Chikirshaya shambhala deva samyutaha.
Chikirshaya shambhala deva samyutaha.
Nipatya tungad ripuyuta natham.
Nipatya tungad ripuyuta natham.
Hatam vyakarshad vyasum oja survyam. Please chant.
Tatasa agatya puram svapitrosh.
Tatasa agatya puram svapitrosh.
Chikirshaya shambhala deva samyutaha.
Chikirshaya shambhala deva samyutaha.
Patya tungam
ripuyuta
natham.
Vipatya
tungam
ripuyuta natham.
Tam vyakarshad vyasum oja survyam. Nipatya tungam ripuyuta natham.
Uddhava Vacha.
Uddhava Vacha.
Shri Uddhava said.
Shri Uddhava said.
Tata.
Tata.
Thereafter.
Thereafter.
Saha.
Saha.
The Lord.
The Lord.
Agatya.
Agatya.
Coming.
Coming.
Puram.
Puram.
To the city of Mathura.
To the city of Mathura.
Swapitra.
Swapitra.
Own parents.
Own parents.
Chikirshaya.
Chikirshaya.
Wishing well.
Wishing well.
Sham.
Sham.
Well-being.
Well-being.
Baladev Samyutaha.
Baladev Samyutaha.
With Lord Baladev.
With Lord Baladev.
Nipatya.
Nipatya.
Dragging down.
Dragging down.
Tungat.
Tungat.
From the throne.
From the throne.
Ripu Yuta Nakam.
Ripu Yuta Nakam.
Leader of public enemies.
Leader of public enemies.
Katam.
Katam.
Kill.
Kill.
Yakarsha.
Yakarsha.
Hold.
Hold.
Vyasum.
Vyasum.
Dead.
Dead.
Ojasa.
Ojasa.
By strength.
Urvyam.
Urvyam.
On the ground.
On the ground. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Uddhava said, thereafter Lord Krishna went to Mathura city with Sri Baladev, and to please their parents, they dragged Kamsa, the leader of public enemies, down from his throne and killed him, pulling him along the ground with great strength. So let's do a petition, if you would like.
Sri Uddhava said,
thereafter Lord Krishna went to Mathura city with Sri Baladev.
And to please their parents,
they dragged Kamsa,
the leader of public enemies,
down from his throne and killed him, pulling him along the ground with great strength. Purport. King Kamsa's death is only briefly described here because such pastimes are vividly and elaborately described in the 10th canto. The Lord proved to be a worthy son of his parents, even at the age of 16 years. Both brothers, Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev, went to Mathura from Vrindavan and killed their maternal uncle, who had given so much trouble to their parents, Vasudev and Devaki. Kamsa was a great giant, and Vasudev and Devaki never thought that Krishna and Balaram, Baladev, would be able to kill such a great and strong enemy. When the two brothers attacked Kamsa on the throne, their parents feared that now Kamsa would finally get the opportunity to kill their sons, whom they had hidden for so long in the house of Nanda Maharaj. The parents of the Lord, due to parental affection, felt extreme danger, and they almost fainted. Just to convince them that they had actually killed Kamsa, Krishna and Baladev pulled Kamsa's dead body along the ground to encourage them. So we've been talking the past few weeks about the type of liberation an enemy gets when he's killed by Krishna. And generally, for the most part, they get impersonal liberation, or sayujya mukti. Sometimes Prabhupada says they also get sarupya mukti, which is they attain the same form as the Lord and they enter into Vaikuntha. So in this case, apparently Kamsa, he received sarupya mukti, which is attaining the same form as Vishnu, and he entered into Vaikuntha. He didn't get impersonal liberation. He got a step up because of his absorption. It said that sadatta bhava bhavitaha, whichever type of absorption one has at the time of death, you know, that's going to determine his next destination and his next body. So according to the opinion of authorities, Kamsa attained sarupya mukti after death. That is to say, he attained the same form as Narayan, Vishnu. Kamsa was thinking of Krishna with his wheel, which means Narayan, who holds a wheel, conch shell, lotus, flower, and club. Even an enemy killed by Krishna gets liberation and is placed in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all good, anyone thinking of him, either as an enemy or as a friend, gets liberation. But the liberation of the devotee and the liberation of the enemy are not the same. The enemy generally gets liberation of sayujya, or impersonal liberation, and sometimes he gets sarupya, which is attaining the same form as the Lord. And So which one did Kansa get of the two? Sarupya. And we know he was pretty absorbed most of his life. He was fearing that he was going to be killed by the eighth son of Devaki. So it said he was always thinking of Krishna with his wheel in hand. And because he was very much afraid of his death, he was thinking of Krishna in that form 24 hours a day without stopping, even while eating, while walking, and while breathing. So he was pretty absorbed. And also in the shloka today, he was called Ripu Yuta Natham, the leader of public enemies. So to me that means a few verses back we were saying how he had an army of great wizards. Not only was he thinking how to kill Krishna himself, but he also dispatched an army of great wizards, which took various shapes, as you know, various demons, to try to kill Krishna in various and interesting ways, and none of them, you know, worked. It was like a cart, a whirlwind, an ass demon. This didn't work, let's try this one. This didn't work, let's try this one. And in the Krishna book, it says that Krishna killed them all as easily as a child breaks a doll. Okay, another point in the purport was made, in the shloka was made how Vasudeva and Devaki were so fearful for the lives of Krishna and Balaram. But at the same time, their ras, they have an interesting ras, because at the same time, they were afraid of them as parents would be afraid for their children, but at the same time, they were also conscious that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they had that kind of rasa, which was different than, Nanda and Yashoda. So just to show how they were fearful for the welfare of their sons, from the purport above, when the two brothers attacked Kamsa on the throne, their parents feared that now Kamsa would finally get the opportunity to kill their sons, whom they had hidden for so long in the house of Nanda Maharaj. The parents of the Lord, due to parental affection, felt extreme danger, and they almost fainted. Due to parental affection, they felt extreme danger, and they almost fainted. But later on in that pastime, in the Krishna book, it says that They were hesitant to embrace Krishna and Balaram. They just offered them respectful obeisances because they were conscious of their position, of his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is from the Krishna book. Devaki and Vasudeva were fully conscious of Krishna's exalted position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although Krishna touched their feet and offered them obeisances and prayers, they did not embrace him, but simply stood up to hear the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they have an interesting rasa, vatsalya ras, but also mixed with awe and reverence. And just as we all know, the Lord prefers to be in that rasa with his devotees, where he's taken care of as a son. He enjoys that sweetness even more than being worshipped as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord enjoys to be taken care of like a child. Vasudev's thoughts of protecting Krishna from the wrath of Kamsa is part of a transcendental relationship. The Lord enjoys more when someone takes him as his subordinate son who needs the protection of a father than he does when someone accepts him as the Supreme Lord. He is the father of everyone and he protects everyone. But when his devotee takes it for granted that the Lord is to be protected by the devotee's care, it is a transcendental joy for the Lord. Thus, when Vasudeva, out of fear of Kamsa, carried him to Vrindavan, the Lord enjoyed it. Otherwise, he had no fear from Kamsa or anyone else. So he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has no fear of any enemy, Kamsa, but he takes the role of taking protection and shelter from his parents, because he enjoys that relationship. Okay. going to go to another topic. So, but before we do that, if anybody had any comments about those two points I just made, or any additions, you could add that now. We're talking about Krishna's the rasa between Krishna and Vasudeva and Devaki. How it was Vasudeva and Devaki took him as their son, but also they were aware of his position as the personality of Godhead. And then we're saying how Kamsa achieved Sarupya liberation, achieving the same form as Krishna, as Vishnu. Whereas most enemies, when they get killed by Krishna, they achieve Sayujya in personal liberation. So he got a little bit of a higher liberation because he was always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna in a negative way. So does anybody have any additions to those topics?
I was going to say that it seems like there's Vasudeva and Devaki are simultaneously aware and not aware, because they have to be somewhat not aware to be able to be the parent thinking that Krishna needs them, correct?
Yeah, I guess Yoga Maya arranges that particular rasa for them. If anybody has any more background on that, that would be good. Yeah,
it seems they had to give him up right away.
And it's unthinkable. And then just and then Devaki had all her sons like killed by her brother, and it's just we can't understand like the transcendental things that are going on.
It's very charming to me how Krishna to break that. So after he killed them, they came and the parents didn't embrace them. They were still feeling awkward. But then Krishna breaks that to say, you know, I couldn't, I had to come, I was afraid of this. He says different things to them to evoke that parental mood. And it just seems to really indicate how he prefers that. He wants to bring them out of that state of formality and remind them that he's helpless. He's just their helpless son. And it's just quite charming how he...
Yes, it's charming. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Krishna enjoys that relationship. Okay, so I was going to make this connection. I was going to put this forward. So the same way that Krishna killed inauspicious Kamsa and he released Vasudeva and Devaki from his prison, similarly, we have to allow Krishna to kill the inauspicious things within our heart so that we may be released from the prison house of material existence. So I was going to put that forward and talk about that a little bit. How we can allow Krishna to kill the inauspicious things in our heart the same way that he killed inauspicious Kamsa. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in Madhya Lila, it says that the word Hari has many different meanings, but two of them are foremost. One meaning is that the Lord takes away all inauspicious things from his devotee. And the second is that he attracts the mind by ecstatic love of Godhead. So I was going to focus on this point that he takes away all inauspicious things from his devotee. When all sinful activities are vanquished by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gradually vanquishes all kinds of impediments on the path of devotional service, as well as the ignorance resulting from these impediments. After this, one totally manifests his original love of Godhead through devotional service in 9 different ways, hearing, chanting, and so forth. So one gradually vanquishes all kinds of impediments on the path of devotional service, as well as the ignorance resulting from these impediments. So what are those impediments, inauspicious things in the heart? Did anybody want to say?
Profit, adoration, distinction, fame.
Yes, that is one of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the point is made, those are like a result. So I'm going to talk about anartas, and then those things are the result of anartas. And what you had mentioned, Mataji, that's like one category of anarta, pratishta. So they're basically things within the heart which are considered to be obstacles in the path of self-realization, things which keep one in the material world. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has put forward four primary blockages to our spiritual cultivation, or as he called them, anarthas, unwanted things, which bind the living entity to the material world and entangle him in miseries. So he breaks it down in four different categories, and they're also broken down differently by some other acharyas, but I'll read the way he breaks it down. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Hridaya Dorlabhya, there's like four main categories. Hridaya Dorlabhya, which is weakness of heart, Aparad, which is all kinds of offenses, Asatrishna, which is material desires, and Tattva Vibhrama, which is illusion about spiritual knowledge. So I'll just repeat those again. So there are like four general categories of anarthas that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur puts outlines, and then within each of those, there's even like further categories. But the four main ones are Hridaya Dorlabhya, weakness of heart, Aparad, all kinds of offenses, Asatrishna, material desires, and Tattva Vibhrama, illusion about spiritual knowledge. So I'll just mention a few of those under each of those main categories. Under Hridaya Dorlabhya, weakness of heart, for example, attachment to objects not related to Krishna, Kutinati, deceitfulness or fault-finding, Matsaryam, enviousness, Pratishta, desire for prestige and position. Under Aparad, there's, of course, Nama Aparad, Seva Aparad, Vaishnava Aparad, Jiva Aparad. Under Asatrishna, which are material desires, for example, desire for material objects, desire for material comfort, for heavenly comforts, mystic powers, a desire for liberation, Tattva Vibhrama, illusion about spiritual knowledge, basically illusion regarding one's own identity, illusion regarding the process and goal of sadhana. And then he says, unlike you mentioned, those things manifest in the following ways, like six enemies of the mind, kama, krodha, lopa, moha, mada, and matsarya, and there are others. So there's like manifestations, there's different manifestations of those blockages. So basically, how do those things come about? The soul's activity becomes adulterated in contact with matter, and as such, the diseased activities are expressed in the form of lust, desire, hankering, inactivity, foolishness, and sleep. So in contact with matter, the soul's activities become adulterated, you know, lifetimes and lifetimes, and then these anarthas are accumulated, and they're expressed, as he calls them, this is actually from Nectar of Devotion, diseased activities. Lust, desire, hankering, inactivity, foolishness, sleep, lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, envy, through their diseased activities. So I'll go a little bit more into that, but just to complete what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says about them, what's the solution for all of this? The performance of Harinam Sankirtan. The more one is interested in hearing and chanting, the more he is purified of material contamination. Liberation from material contamination is called anartha nivritti, indicating a diminishing of all unwanted things. When one is freed from material contamination, his firm faith awakens in devotional service. When firm faith develops, a taste arises, and by that taste, one becomes attached to devotional service. When this attachment intensifies, the seed of love of Krishna fructifies. It's basically moving through the stages of bhakti. And as I mentioned, this contamination arises from lifetimes and lifetimes of association with material nature. And when the jiva takes on his false ego or ahankara, he's falsely obliged to become identified with matter. As long as he is ignorant about his identity, he is sure to act wrongly and thereby become entangled in material contamination. Right? So he takes on a false identity. Because of that, he acts wrongly, and thereby he becomes entangled in material contamination. And Bhagavad Gita 13:22, it talks about how lifetimes and lifetimes of different associations with different modes, what that produces. So one of the key shlokas is 13:22. Purusha prakriti shto hi bhunte prakriti janbunan karanam guna sangosya sarasadyoni janmasu. Prakriti shta, being situated in material energy, guna sangha, the association with the modes of nature. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. So the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another, just as one changes dress. And this change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another. And this is due to his taking association with various modes of nature. So what's the solution for that? One has to rise above the three modes of material nature and become situated in a transcendental position. That is called Krishna consciousness. Due to contamination of material association through many, many millions of births, one's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism. But when one engages in devotional service and constantly chants Hare Krishna, the dust quickly clears and one is elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. So the prayers which we chant on the weekend, the Lord Chaitanya Shikshastakam, the Chaita Darpana Marjanam, glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life of repeated birth and death. One type of anartha mentioned above, one category, was the illusion about one's own identity, which you can see how so many people are out there suffering from that in the world. And when Sanatana Goswami approached Lord Chaitanya, he asked him the very relevant question of, does anyone know what was the question that he asked him? Yeah, Kayami. Kayami, like, what am I? Why did the threefold miseries always give me trouble? If I do not know this, how can I be benefited? Which is like a very relevant and basic question. What's the point of anything else if one doesn't have the answer to that question? Right, he was a minister in the Muslim government, and he had many riches and opulences, but what's the point of all that if I don't know my true identity and if there's death? So that's categorized as one type of anartha, is illusion regarding one's own identity. And we can only get those answers through devotional service. You know, people out there, they don't have higher knowledge, so they can only rely on what they perceive with their senses. You know, and some people are into, you know, different scriptures and trying to figure out what's it all about. You know, but many aren't. You know, they're just satisfied with the program that they're in. And for example, like agnostics, they refuse to accept anything higher than what they can perceive with their senses. So that's, fortunately, we have higher information that is beyond the senses. Okay, a little bit more. In the Gita, it says that, when we're talking about diseased activities, and one of them was lust, the diseased activities of the conditioned jiva in the material world. And in the Gita, it says that lust is the greatest enemy of the jiva. And as we know, this lust is actually a transformation of the jiva's pure love of God. When he comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love of Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Lust means just like hankering for material things in a general way. So in association with the mode of passion, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust. The Supreme Personality of God had expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss, and the living entities are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. They also have partial independence, but by misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. So by misuse of their independence, the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, and they come under the sway of lust. Bhagavad Gita 3:37, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion, and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. And the spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. So also in that chapter in the Gita, in the third chapter, it says that the material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned souls to fulfill these lustful propensities. And when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, the living entities begin to inquire about their real position. If therefore the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, which is gives the progression, lust is turning to wrath, which is turning to illusion. So instead of turning that into the mode of ignorance and wrath, if instead is elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. So that lust and the mode of passion, if it's elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation. Lust is only the perverted reflection of the love of God, which is natural for every living entity. One can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service, and turn lust into love of Godhead, the highest perfection stage of human life. Okay, and there's like one last section, which I'll give an overview of how Krishna destroys those inauspicious things in the heart, and how we're released from the prison house of material existence. So I'll just read some shlokas which give an overview of that, just a general overview of that process. But before I do that, did anybody want to comment on those topics of lust is the all-devouring sinful enemy, and the Sankirtan movement cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years. Did anybody want to say anything about that? And before I give the last section? Yes.
I just want to say something, how I appreciate how you repeat things. So it really... because, you know, I'm so spaced out. I'll just pick up one thing or another, but then you repeat it.
Thank you.
I can hear it again. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's all these inauspicious things within the heart, and the process is obviously devotional service, Harinam Sankirtan, and the gradual process of Anartha Nivritti, to reach the higher stages of bhakti. So that process is, it's not always, you know, fun, but at the end, it's when you feel that clearing of a certain anarta, it can be joyful and release those blockages that Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about. So just really quick, the last thing, I'll just read. There's a progression of shlokas in the second chapter of the first canto, which talks about how the jiva is released from material contamination. So I'll just read it through. Take a few minutes. So it starts with 1.2.17, and then it's just the next four or five shlokas. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous and properly heard and chanted. So it says, cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge to hear his messages. Right, Krishna is doing the clearing and the cleansing, but of course we have to put in our endeavor, our part, which is taking up devotional service in a proper way. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and the rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service is established as an irrevocable fact. And that irrevocable loving service is characterized by the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. So the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. The devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. And then there's the process that he goes from sattva to shuddha sattva. Thus established in a mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. The man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service, he gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. Bhakti mam abhijanati, one can only know me as I am through devotional service. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced, the Hridaya Granthi, which is the knot of ignorance and the knot of knot of spirit and matter is untied by the Lord. This knot is called the Ahankara, which falsely obliges the living being to become identified with matter. And when one is freed from material contamination, his firm faith awakens, the taste arises, attachment, and when attachment intensifies, the seed of love of Krishna fructifies. Okay, so I'll stop there. Please let me know if there are any additions or corrections, any points of discussion. Yes, thank you.
Thank you for reading those verses. It's very powerful. I particularly like the line about gaining scientific knowledge of the Supreme Personality. It's facts that we realize, it's something that's perceivable and can be understood by following this process.
Yes.
So thank you
yes.
for that.
Knowing his opulences and his characteristics.
Mm-hmm. No, I just wanted to say thank you for a nice class. It was very well researched and very thoughtfully done, so thank you.
Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.